Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
And welcome to What is Going Om. I'm Victor Furman, sitting in tonight for Sandy Sedgbeer, who's a little bit under the weather. And Sandy, I know you're listening, and all of us at Om Times Radio, as well as your listeners and friends, are sending healing prayers, healing energy, and compassion for a quick and complete recovery. So get well soon for us, Sandy, won't you? Tonight, we're going to ask three questions. Why do we choose to live in a world of pain, suffering, and chaos? Why are we here, and what is our purpose? And can we move beyond fear to live a life of love? Joining us tonight to address these questions and much, much more is world-renowned spiritual medium and number one New York Times best-selling author James Van Praagh. James is a survival evidence medium with more than 30 years of experience providing evidential proof of life after death via highly detailed messages from the spirit realm. A regular guest on national radio and television shows, including Oprah, The View, and 48 Hours, James was the creator and executive producer of CBS Television's long-running hit series, The Ghost Whisperer. Recently, he launched the James Van Praagh School of Mystical Arts, an online academy where students can explore a wide range of spiritual topics from mindfulness to mediumship. And you'll find more about that on his website by visiting www.vanpraagh, and that's VanPraagh.com. Tonight, he joins us to discuss his latest book, The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. It is my pleasure and honor to welcome to What is Going Om, Mr. James Van Praagh. Good evening, James, and welcome.
Good evening, Victor. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction, and nice to be with you. Sorry to hear Sandy's under the weather, but we send our healing prayers.
Absolutely. Healing prayers and energy to Sandy. James, before we start the interview, I just want to share something with you. My wife, Lori Sue, and I had the pleasure of witnessing what you do at the Manhattan Center Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City about, we're going to say 15 or 16 years ago. I don't remember the exact date.
Wow.
It was a capacity crowd of more than 2,000 people, and you were bringing wonderful messages through for random members of the audience. Now, my wife and I are both blessed with the gift of sensing energy. And every time you brought a message through, I saw something happening around you. So after the event, I asked my wife if she noticed anything while you were delivering messages, and she smiled and said yes. So I said, write it down. Don't tell me. Write it down. And I wrote down what I saw, and then we swapped notes, and no surprise, we actually witnessed the same thing. Now, I'm not sure if anyone has ever told this to you before, but as you connect with spirit, a beautiful purple-colored field appeared around you. And when the communication was flowing, golden sparks filled the field, and each time you stopped, the field would close and then reopen when you started again. What a blessing to witness this. Has anyone shared that with you before?
Well, first of all, thank you, Victor. That was 15 years ago, 2,000 people in a ballroom. Wow, that's pretty amazing. I've had many people actually come up to me, and they've said the same colors, purple, they'll see. But people have the interpreted. It's very interesting. And some people say there was a being with a purple hood. There was a being's all purple, and there was gold when they were speaking. So I have had those colors before, and that interpretation. Or some people see complete white or funnels of energy around me when I'm working. And it's different, but I have heard purple and gold, and that is very – that's what I many times will become aware of when I'm working. Yes, it's very good.
Well, what a wonderful thing to witness, and thank you for giving us that gift that night 15 or 16 years ago.
Well, thank you for reminding me. I forgot about that. That was just, wow, a long time ago. We've done a lot of demonstrations
time.
Since then.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
And you never know when you do. I just want to mention that you never know when you do things in life every moment. You never know what the rippling effect is going to be. So that evening, when you saw that and you felt that, and the audience felt that, me as a medium when I'm working there on that stage, I never know, of course, how it's going to affect people in the audience, how it's going to affect people in the spirit world. And isn't it great? And it's been happening probably the past 2 years. where many people come up to me, whether it's at the store, whether it's a car wash, whether it's getting coffee, and they'll say, I want to thank you because years ago I was in an audience with you and this happened and that happened, and it was a rippling effect. And isn't it true that you never know what you're going to say, act, or do every day? You never realize how it affects people. Amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's an old expression that says people may not remember what you've said, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And I think you made everyone in that audience feel very special that night. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Now, let's begin with your beginning. For those who don't know your story, when did the gift of mediumship first appear in your life?
Well, I really was, I would say, born with that ability. My soul came back with that awareness. I remember, I can remember far back as probably around 2 years of age, around there, around 18, 2 months, 2 years. And I remember very distinctly that my parents were in the living room, and they put me back in the crib, in the back, or whatever. Yeah, I think it was a crib. And I was very upset because I wanted to be with them in the living room, and I started crying my eyes out. And I remember that there was a gentleman in the corner of the room who had white hair and bright blue eyes, and he was holding some kind of a toy in his hand. And I remember he walked over to me, and I was playing with this toy. And I remember he used to come to me most evenings when my parents would lay me down to make sure I was at rest. And several years later, my grandmother was going through a photo album, and we came across this photo, and I said, "Stop, who is that man there?" She said, "Oh, that's your grandfather. He died before you were born." And I said, "That's the man who used to come to see me every night when I was a baby." And she said, "Oh, that was him." And that was my first memory of that experience. But I used to see colors around people at Oryx Field when I was a young boy, and I used to see spirit all the time. I used to ask my mother when I was like 4 or 5, I'd say, "Do you see that person? Look, who's that person? What's that color?" And she said, "What are you talking about? That doesn't exist." I said, "Yes, right there." And then she realized, because she also had an ability in the family, she was very psychic. And she said, "Oh, you must be careful about telling people you can see these things, because most people can't see them. So just keep that to us." And that was how I was raised. And several experiences as a child, but I never thought it was anything strange. I thought it was very, very natural. So very clairvoyant as a child, very natural, I guess you say. My mother's father was very, very psychic. He used to tell my grandmother, these are stories I heard, that when she was setting the table for Sunday dinner, that he would say to her, "You better set another place at the table because we're having a guest." And she would just go ahead and do that. And at 5:15, the neighbor would show up. And my mother on my father's side used to read tea leaves. She was from England. My other grandparents from Ireland. And she used to give me readings with tea leaves when I was a young boy. And it was just a natural type of thing. Didn't think anything special of it. And then really, I went through regular life. And I didn't really think of it. Around the age of 15, 16, I didn't have the visions anymore. I didn't really see colors. Didn't pay attention to it. Didn't see spirit. And really until my 20s, when I moved to California, and I studied broadcasting. I wanted to be a sitcom writer because I'm funny and I have a sense of humor. At least I thought I did. But Hollywood didn't think so. So I ended up doing a temporary job in some production. I think it was Paramount Studios. And I remember it was there that a friend of mine, agency, it was William Morris Agency, a lady who was working with me, she said, "You want to go see a medium?" And I said, "What is a medium?" And she said, "He's someone who talks to dead people." And I told her I didn't really believe in that. I thought, I really don't believe in that sort of thing. I was raised an organized religion, a Catholic, and I said, not that I believe in that either, but I just don't know about talking to dead people. But I just went to this meeting with her to humor her. And I walked into this apartment of this man by the name of Brian Hurst, and the first thing he did, he looked at me and he said, "You're a medium." And he said, "The spirit people are telling me that in 2 years' time, you're going to start doing messages, and you're going to help to change the consciousness of the planet." And I looked at this gentleman, and I had just moved to California from New York, so I was a cynical New Yorker, and I've heard that California was the place of fruits and nuts, you know, that's what the New Yorkers in California. And I thought, oh, here we go, I've hit it right here, we're going off. And what happened was this man came through with some incredible evidential details about family members and friends that had passed over with names and addresses and things that just amazed me, astounded me. So it got my curiosity going, and I went to a place called the Bodhi Tree Bookstore in Los Angeles. It was the premium, you know, New Age bookstore at that time in the 80s. And I read every single weekend. I would go there and read from, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning till like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, all different subjects. And I found life after death, mediumship, psychic phenomena. I was just fascinated. And it was like a sponge. I was like a sponge just taking it all in. And what I did after that, Victor, was on all these books they talked about this common theme about how to know oneself, to understand one's soul, you must start going within and listen to that voice within and begin with meditation. So I just did that. I just wanted to relax and become aware of my soul self. And I started meditating on a regular basis. Not formally, by the way, just by myself. I knew you had to work with the breath, so I worked with the inhalation and the exhalation, and used to visualize a rose or a beautiful color. And probably within 2 months after I started that, I started once again to see colors around people, known as the aura, and I would start again seeing a spirit very, very clearly. And and sometimes it was objectively, sometimes subjectively. And I was working at that time at Paramount Studios in their legal department for the syndication department. And this coworker came back from lunch. I remember it was 12:40 in the afternoon. And right behind her was this lady, the spirit, who looked right at me. And she said telepathically, "You need to let her know I'm okay. I'm her grandmother from Idaho. I had a white house with yellow shutters, and we made a footstool cover together. Tell her." So I asked this coworker, and she said, "Oh, my gosh, that's my grandmother. I helped her. I used to visit her every summer in her house in Idaho. Those are the colors of her house. And she taught me how to do needlepoint, and together we made a footstool cover. And she made a promise to me that when she's in heaven, she'll try to come back and let me know that she's still around, that she loves me." And that was the very first reading I did, her message, and that was 35 years ago. I ran out of Paramount, went back to my apartment, and I didn't know what to do because now my whole life was different. I thought I was a freak. I thought, "Oh, my God, how can I live a normal life? I see dead people. I'm seeing colors." And I just really didn't know what to do. So I called up that medium that I went to see, that Brian Hirst. I called him up, and I told him how upset I was. And he said, "James, don't you remember the prediction from the spirit world?" I said, "Yeah, kind of." He said, "James, do you remember that happened 2 years ago today?" So it was to the day that it started happening. That was my story.
And that's what we call evidential mediumship. And we'll be back with more of James von Prague and his brand new book, The Power of Love, after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And we're back on What Is Going Om. I'm Victor Furman, sitting in tonight for Sandy Sedgebeer. My guest is James von Prague, and we're talking about his new book, The Power of Love. So, James, before the break, you were talking about your first conscious experience of evidential mediumship. For our listeners who are not familiar with the term, please just give us a little more about what evidential mediumship means.
Sure. So a medium, evidential medium, is someone who is... people, first of all, should understand the difference between a psychic and a medium, because a lot of people mix those two terms up, and they're very, very different. Everybody is psychic or intuitive from one sense or another, from one level to another, and that's having an awareness of the energy from the past, present, or future. A medium is someone who's very, very psychic, but also able to increase their energetic field or their reception, where they can tune into higher dimensions and receive information from the spirit world. An evidential medium is a medium who's able to bring through names, details that only the person that's having the message and the spirit would know. So that's evidential information.
Absolutely. And then you had mentioned the fact that you had had grandparents and your mom and other members. Do you find that in families who have these gifts that it does run in families?
Oh, very, very much so. It's very genetic, yes. And it's really very interesting, Victor, because, you know, we're so karmically, you know, we're from karma in many ways, or there's always we come back here to learn and grow for our own soul's growth, but also for the family, for the soul family. So that could be generations back. We're still working from generations, two generations, three generations back. We're still working out things from them. So we continue doing that. So, yes, it's very much genetically involved, without a doubt.
Now you had mentioned that your mother was very, very softly and lovingly cautioned you against sharing what you were experiencing. I think today we're in a more open society. What advice would you give to parents whose children are demonstrating these abilities?
I wrote a book several years ago called Looking Beyond, and it was a book done for exactly that. Parents would come up to me at book signings, and they'd say, my child sees things or hears things or knows things. What can I do? And the advice is the same. The advice is to encourage them. Ask them, what do they see? What does it mean? If they have dreams about a past life, let them explain to you what that means. Don't negate it, but really be positive about it, because this is very true for them. It's a very real experience, so encourage them.
And you would encourage them in these gifts, as well as any other gifts that they demonstrate, be it artistic or mechanical or scientific. So it's just a question of,
exactly,
when a child expresses something, to encourage them and to lovingly bring them forward and lead them into that path.
But exactly, Victor, and also bring them to a sense of, if you will, mindfulness as well, a sense of connection with each other, the oneness with each other. You know, give them an education about soulful living. And kids are so more open than adults. You know, I think that, number one, they've just come from the spirit level, so their mindset, their awareness is of that mindset. And they're very honest. Children 2, 3, 4, 5 years of age will tell you exactly what they're seeing, feeling, experiencing. Unfortunately, the adults, many times, conditioning in days past, as you said, not currently because the times have changed, but there would be very much conditioning. Oh, you don't see that, or you have to do this in order to receive this. So many children will shut down and have to reprogram themselves and do what the parent wants or the adult wants or the teacher wants. There's conditions in matter as far as love goes. So I think that's changing now because more people are mindful and more aware. But when I first started 35 years ago, very different, as you mentioned, a very different society, very different world. And I remember that people used to say, you've got to be careful because you're going to be locked up in an institution if you tell people what you do. So that's when it very first started. And when that medium said to me, Brian Hirst said to me, you're going to help, the spirit world is going to use you to help change the consciousness. And at the time, I thought he was crazy. But, of course, now I see that my work and many other mediums have indeed just done that, where, as you said, it's much more acceptable now than it's ever been before, and it continues to be.
And one more point on your personal life and experience. You had mentioned the fact that you were very aware as a child, and then in your teen years that seemed to dissipate, and you went into the workaday world and then reemerged later on. Do you find that with a lot of people with these gifts?
Very much so. And I don't know if there's some connection with hormonal, you know, the body going on, the endocrine system happening. I think there's some factor involved in that, but I have definitely found that out, that the teenage years, people's kind of, the childhood years, it expresses itself, and then the teenage years, it kind of shuts down, and then later on, it has to get a start again. And I'm finding a lot of students that, you know, I work with a lot of students in my school, the exact same thing, that in their early 20s, they start opening up even more so. So, yeah, there seems to be that development break, probably around puberty, I would say. Puberty ends up at 17, 18 years of age, and then they start up, and it's full force. Probably around the age I found, 25, 26, 27, is when they start really shining. And then,
I was,
of course,
actually
there's
a late bloomer.
Enough life experience. Well, there's enough life experience to draw from as well.
Absolutely. I was actually a late bloomer when it came to that. I shut down in my late teens, and it took me till I was 38 to sort of reopen to it, but it was a very special reopening. And this show's about you, not about me. So let's talk about your new book, okay. The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. What inspired you to write the book?
You know, The Power of Love really has been a book that's been, it took 35 years in the making, I would say, because I couldn't have written it before this. I don't feel I was ready for this. I would say about maybe 2 or 3 years ago, my guides, you know, they work with me all the time, and they said, you're going to write a very special book in the coming years? And I said, okay. And I just opened myself to whatever comes in. And they said, it's going to have to do with love. I said, all right. And when they started channeling, I was channeling this information, I was reminded so much of the sense of that humans try so much to make the simple truth so complex. I mean, the truth is so simple, but yet we as humans want to make it complex. And really what it comes down to is love, love or fear. And the spirit people often say, and I've talked about this for years, but they said, please tell people, please teach them, that life is just a series of choices, that our soul comes back to learn many things in this school, earth school for the soul, and life is a series of choices, and all choices are based upon two things, love or fear. And love is that universal source energy, that everything, that energy which we are made of, and everything around us is made from loving energy. And then there's the fear energy. And I love the saying from a 12-step program, fear, F-E-A-R, false ego appearing real, because the humans tend to many times get involved in the ego self. And when you're in the ego self, you kind of shut off that connection with source energy, and you start living from the human point of view. So going back to what I was talking about earlier, you know, from a young age, we become programmed to having to please other people. So immediately we're getting into the fear mode because we're doing something afraid that we won't receive love. So we have to behave a certain way in order to receive their love. So we're coming out of fear. And a lot of people live that way for a lot of their lives until they have that opening, if you will, or that awareness, or something happens with an aha moment. And they say, oh, wait a minute, that's not my truth. And I often say people will never be happy, not unless they're living from love. If they're living in fear, they won't be happy because that's not their natural vibration. Love is a natural vibration. So when people start living from their source energy, their truth, their love, that loving state, then they'll have what they want. Then life will happen as it's meant to be. But when they live in fear, they won't be happy. It just limits themselves. And I always say people, they always look for others to please. You know, they always look for others to say, you're doing a good job, I love you. And it's unfortunate, but people can never love us more than we can love ourselves. And we'll never please people the amount that we think we can. And I always tell people, and it's very, very true. So the spirit world worked with me on this book. My guides came in. And it was interesting because I have certain guides that work with me, to come in, go out, different guides. But the ones who helped me write the book, I noticed were a different vibration as well, enhancing my regular group of guides. And they called themselves the Council of Love, the Love Council. I'm like, okay. And all these messages in the book, the chapters, were really just very simplistic ways, but it was, in a way, essential about loving oneself, you know, how to grow and evolve, try to see things from another's point of view, the golden rule, sharing love with others, all those things which we hear about. They came through very beautifully, and I just really channeled the book. I just opened myself up to whatever they had to say.
Now, you had mentioned being ready to receive these messages and write that book. Do you think it's also about the time in our world right now that this was the right time to produce this
well,
book?
Well, that's a very great insight that you have there, because very, very good insight. Now, several people have said to me, and this book was planned 2 years ago, I guess it was, or 3 years ago, whatever it was. And they say, boy, great timing with this, with the political gardening here in this world, in the world right now, with everything going on and the upheavals and changes and transformations. And I was like, wow, I guess it is. And really, when you look at it, it's an amazing, it's obviously divinely orchestrated. And I just got to be, aha, one of those aha moments, because it is, the timing is impeccable here. It's a perfect book for the times that we're in, because a lot of people are jumping into fear, a lot of people around, and it's just it's transformation. It's always transformation. Those things we want to change have to come to the surface and be seen before we can change them. So I think we're in for a big change, transformative time right now, and we just have to realize that we are all love. It is all love. Don't jump into the fear, because that's not who we are. Fear is an illusion.
You know, it's interesting.
Only love is real, right?
Absolutely not. I'm sorry. I'm so enthusiastic about doing this interview with you that cutting you up, and
that's
I apologize for that.
No problem.
I just wanted to mention that you had talked about how we interpret love and how we interpret what we have to do for love. And I remember as a young man, my father was sick when I was very young, and I never felt loved by him until I became part of his healing and caretaking team. And that sort of wired in my young mind this idea that when we help each other and we help others and care for each other and heal each other, that's when we receive love. And it took me a long time to internalize and love myself and to reemerge with the understanding that that isn't necessarily so, that it has to start within and then it can come without.
That's right. You cannot look to another person to receive that love because, like with your father, and this happens quite often, and in generations past, and many times, this is so interesting because, I've, you know, I just hundreds of thousands of these messages, and many times a parent will come through, mostly a parent, and they'll say, I'm sorry I didn't say I loved you when I was alive. I'm very, very sorry. And, you know, the person would say, well, why couldn't they? And the spirit would say, I never learned how to love. My parents never taught me about love, so how would I know to give it to you something I didn't know about? Which is very true. I remember with my father, we never said I love you until after my mother passed away first, and I made sure, I would make sure my father knew that we said I love you. So after my mom passed, I said, Dad, I just want you to know I love you. And for two men, it's a hard thing in those days. And he said, I love you too. And the whole family then started saying, I love you. And it really is important. And but we can never force other people to love us. We have to live by example. We got to show them love. We got to act a certain way. And they'll look and say, well, you behave a certain way. I like how you are. What is that? Oh, I'm just loving. I'm loving life. I'm loving myself. I'm loving people I interact with. So maybe we can teach people by the way we behave instead of forcing people to be a certain way.
Absolutely. And I think it's so important that when we're together with family, even if we have disagreements of people that we love and truly care about, that we always say and leave on by saying, I love you and or I forgive you if there's a forgiving situation. And that way, because you never know the next time you'll see them in this lifetime. And
well, you don't know
not
if
all
that,
of us are fortunate enough.
Absolutely.
Not all of us are fortunate enough to have a James Von Prague to bring that connection of love message back after they're gone. So
it's true, Victor. We should talk more about that because that's a good one.
Absolutely. And my guest tonight is James Von Prague. His new book is called The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. James, please tell our listeners how they can find out more about your book and your work.
Sure. They can go on my Facebook page, which is James Von Prague, the public page, or my website, www.vonprague.com.
And we'll be back with more of James Von Prague on What's Going on the Om Times.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hi, I found a toy dinosaur over on the playground by Smith Street. It had this phone number on it, and, well, I just wanted to make sure the dinosaur made it back to its little owner.
When I found the little sippy cup, I just had to give you a call. It's for a kid, you know?
I know my son gets super attached to the smallest things, even a fire truck, and I'd be happy to drop it off.
We'd do anything for kids, yet 1 in 6 children in the U.S. struggle with hunger. Help end childhood hunger near you. Learn how at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to What's Going On. I'm Victor Furman, sitting in tonight for Sandy Sedgbeer. Our guest is James Von Prague, and we're talking about his new book, The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. And before the break, James, we were talking about this concept of people acknowledging each other and not arguing and not fighting, especially families, because we never know when we say goodbye to someone, it may be the last time in this physical lifetime that we say that. What advice do you have for folks?
Well, it's two things that came into my mind when you were speaking about it, which are really, really important. Number one, I talk about this in the book about perspective. We are souls coming back to this school. This is Earth is a school for our souls. It's one of many, many schools. There are many, many solar systems, universes, galaxies. This is one of millions, if not trillions. The spirit people have said to me, you know, when you humans want to know about what, where are we in the evolutionary scale, you say to them, the Earth is like a grain of sand on the beach. That's how immense things are. But they've also said to me that as souls, we come back with soul groups and soul families. And the hardest lessons to learn are usually those with family members, their soul group souls, because there's an emotional component to that as well. And that's, and of course also past life karma and so forth. So they're the hardest lessons, family. But in your life, generally speaking, in the lifetime, when you have a hard and difficult time with a person, whether it's family or friends or work or situations, that's also incredible opportunities for growth. Those are the times where you'll grow the most. The soul grows the most with the most difficult times we find. So when we can use love to really an understanding, it can help us evolve. And I agree with you that you never know what tomorrow might bring or might not bring. So make every moment count when you're with your friends, your family. Make sure that you leave on good standard, because you don't have tomorrow. You only have today. And it's happened to all of us where we go and say, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I wish I could take that back. You know, you don't want to leave that person with that. You want to leave in a good way, in a loving vibration.
Absolutely. And as a wedding officiant, I often tell my couples as part of my blessing on them and my advice to them is never go to bed angry. Couples, ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen and gentlemen, women and women, if you have a partner and you love that partner, when you go to bed with love on your lips and not anger in your heart. That's so important.
You know, Victor, it reminds me as you're speaking, it's spirit has come often many times. They said, you humans have to understand that the time you have on this earth, it's borrowed time. Treat it well. And I often say it's like you borrow, well, in days past, you'd borrow something from a neighbor, say a cup of sugar or something, and you'd make sure, or anything you borrow from someone, you want to make sure you return it usually better than you received it. Same thing with this life. We want to make sure that we return it in a better way. We want to make sure that Earth, this world, is better than what we found it.
Absolutely. Now, if we operate from soul, from our soul essence, we're doing okay. But in the physical world, in the three-dimensional world, we also operate from ego. How can we go from ego to soul? And don't we need our egos from time to time?
I think ego is great. I think ego is fine. But we've got to make sure that it's in proportionate to who we are, and we use it properly. We don't want ego to drive our lives. We want our soul to drive our life. We want a soul-filled life, not an ego-filled life. Ego is important to get you out of the house, to make you do certain things, to, you know, have a career or business, or that's fine. But everything needs to be in balance. If it's, you know, if you're an ego and you're just ego-driven, you're going to be out of balance. You've got to make sure that it's properly balanced with the amount of compassion that you give and you receive, and that you treat another person as you want to be treated. The golden rule is very, very important. And what you give out, the energy that you give out, is exactly what you're going to get back. So that's really what it is. And I also, in the book, I talk about the oneness. We're all connected to that one energy. In this three-dimensional world, the two greatest illusions that we have, one is death. We think there's an end. There is no end. It's just stepping out of the suitcase. And the second is separation. And when you pass out of this three-dimensional world and enter the other dimensions, one of the first realizations you have is that, oh, wow, I'm connected to everyone and everything. I'm not separate. I'm actually connected. So if we have that realization while we're still here in a three-dimensional world, in the physical body, we'll behave differently. We'll treat people differently. When we look at someone, we realize that they're an extension of ourselves. How do I treat them to make their lives better? I believe that every single person that comes upon our path are either our teachers or our students. They're there to teach us, or we're there to teach them, or we're there to help them. We're here to help each other out, not to judge someone. A lot of people will jump into judgment first, and I believe that judgment is fear-based, because I'm judging another because I feel I might lose control. There is no control. That's an illusion. There is no control. You cannot control another person. You can't control a situation. But what you can control is your reaction to that. So if someone does something or says something, you can have a certain reaction about how you're going to feel about that. But you cannot control another person. So why judge them? We're the same. We're not better. We're not worse. We're the same. So I believe that when we meet people, you have to meet them for where they're at that moment. What level are they at? Good, bad, or indifferent. See them for who they are at. If there's certain behaviors that they live by, you know, just, you know, where are they coming from? What's their stuff? If they yell at you, if they behave badly, many times it's a projection. It's something from their own lives that is not in wholeness of being. So they throw it out there just trying to get validation in a way. So that's really what I think when we have a change of perspective and realize that we're all connected. You know, what lessons are they teaching you? How can I make their lives better?
And that connection, that recognition of that oneness can be derived from a regular practice of mindfulness and meditation, can it not?
Exactly right. Yes, so the words out of my mouth. Mindfulness, awareness, just being aware that you are a soul having a human experience. And yes, we're in linear time, but really there is no such thing as time. When we say goodbye to this world, whether it's 50 years or 90 years, 10 years, you step outside of time. And from a soul's point of view, the time here on this earth is very quick. 90 years in human life, that seems forever, but in the soul, it's a blink of an eye. So when you go back to the spirit side of life and you have, which everybody does, a life review, you relive, re-see experiences that you had in human form, and you feel it and see it and experience it 10 times, 20 times, 30 times stronger than you did originally in the human world. So I often say to people, treat others you want to be treated. Live a life that you'll be very proud of when you have your life review. You don't want to be in the spirit world going, oh no, what did I do? You know, in this physical life, we say something to someone or do something, we often will say, oh, I shouldn't have said that, shouldn't have done that. Imagine when the spiritual dimensions, when it's nothing but it's a mental world, all our thoughts are realized. Can you imagine if you step over to the side and you regret a behavior, you regret what you said to somebody? Over there, it'll go over and over and over again in your mind. Can you imagine that? There's no time. So you have to relive that in your head over and over again. So many people, I say, you know, that can be heaven if you try to live the best life you could, demonstrate compassion and helpfulness and forgiveness. Or it can be hell if you hurt somebody, went out of your way to hurt somebody, get over on somebody in some way. That can be your hell. So live accordingly, humans, right?
Can we help those who are on the other side with prayers of forgiveness? Can we help them?
Yeah, you bet we can. You bet we can, because they hear our thoughts. They hear our prayers. When we think of them, our thoughts go to them very loudly. So if we can send prayers of love, forgiveness, healing, you know, many people have a hard time forgiving a loved one that passed over, didn't treat them well on the earth. Like I said earlier, it's maybe they didn't know any better, so you should be the better one. And they will hear your thoughts. Many times with suicides, people have been suicides, not all suicides, but some suicides, there's a lot of regret from the spirit. They're regretful because they're not dead. They're very, very much alive, and they feel bad for the ones left behind. The best thing we could do for a suicide, a person, a soul, is to forgive them, is to send them love and to help them. Because if we love them, then they can help for them to love themselves and forgive themselves. And not all suicides,
absolutely,
but some of the suicides. Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's get back to the three-dimensional world. How do we keep our hearts open?
I don't want to.
In daily life? You don't want to. Okay, let's go.
I don't want to get back to the three-dimensional world. How do we keep ourselves? I think keeping ourselves open to love, that the energy of love, which we are all of. I often say, I play games all day. Like, okay, is that coming from love or is that coming from fear? Is that person coming from love or is that coming from fear? Is it making my heart sing? Am I being happy? Am I being active in my daily activities of life? Am I very proud of what I'm doing right now? Will I make some kind of impact for someone's life in a good way? I often think on a daily basis, too, we can change the energy. So I'm a great example, a strange example, but a good example. Let's say I want to go to Starbucks, and I go in there. I will talk to the person behind the counter, not only giving them the money for the coffee, whatever. I'll say, how are you today? I love, you know, what you're wearing, your green apron, or how are you feeling today? I try and change the energy. Even in an elevator, someone's there, and I say, how are you today? It doesn't hurt to change the energy. And, you know, just by you saying that, it'll affect them. It's saying love to them. On some level, they're being validated, and they'll turn to a coworker, or they'll turn to another person during the day, and they'll say, how are you? Because on some level, they'll know they feel better because somebody acknowledged them. So I think wherever we can demonstrate love or validation, acknowledgement, that's the first step, for sure.
Love and kindness, paying it forward.
That's right. Yeah. Just being that way. And then after a while, that's a great way to be. It's a great way to feel. It's a great way. And, you know, it's a second nature to me now, but a lot of people come up to me, whether it's someone helped me in the garden store or whatever it might be, say, you know, you're really pretty happy-go-lucky. And I said, well, why not? Life is too short to be upset. And I really think that joy is part of the journey. And I say J-O-U-R-N-E-Y. Joy is part of the journey. And make it a good life. This is an opportunity for our souls. It really is. There are a lot of souls trying to get back to this earth. Believe it or not, this is a place to advance. So, you know, we should not take advantage of it. We should take advantage. We shouldn't take it for granted. You know, we really should live to the fullest.
Absolutely. You know, what fascinates me is that we talk about loving kindness. We talk about the golden rule. A lot of people don't realize that the foundation of every faith on this planet that's now or has ever been extols that principle. Love one another. Take care of one another. And it's pardon me for saying this, but the man-made rules and regulations that are put on top of those basic fundamental truths that sort of mask and create the fear and create the dissension.
So I really just don't have to do the interview because your responses are exactly what I would say. So it's exactly true. I always say that no one religion has all the truth, but all religions have bits of the truth, and that truth is the golden rule. And that's really, it's exactly what you said. But then the human gets on top of that, and the human tries to put their own power and control people. And that's not what it's about. It's about treating others you want to be treated and making people's lives better. It's very true.
And I say man-made because women would never allow this to happen.
Funny. Funny. It's interesting, though. Absolutely. I think the consciousness is shifting. I do think things are changing. I think some people say, oh, isn't there a lot more fear? Things are happening so badly in this world. And I'm saying, well, I don't know about that. I think that we're more open, we're more aware of it now than we ever before because of the internet and media and so forth. We're maybe more aware of it. Maybe it's still the same, but we're more aware. I'd like to think, but we also can change things more. We can be more conscious. We can treat others in a better way. Even if people say, how can I change the world? And I say, well, let's start with ourselves first. So instead of changing, in order to change the macrocosm, the first thing we try to do is change the microcosm. So go within yourself and bring yourself back to wholeness. Are there any conflicts within yourself? Is there any judgments? Is there anything going on with you which has not been forgiven, not in wholeness yet? First, you have to take care of your own house. And I believe there is that rippling effect. I think that'll lend itself to go out to the macrocosm. But I think we really first start with ourselves and our own little atmospheres.
Love like charity begins at home. The message from James von Prague, author of the new book, The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. And we'll be back with James after these messages on the OM Times Radio Network.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to What's Going On. I'm Victor Furman, sitting in this evening for Sandy Sedgbeer. And again, Sandy's a little bit under the weather. We send her our healing prayers, our healing energy, and our love and compassion. And I'm sure she'll be back with us soon. So we're talking with James von Prague. His new book is called The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. James, your book is broken up in a series of themes with real-life stories where you offer solutions. Can you give us a couple of examples from the book about that?
Well, I don't remember. It was 2 years ago, so I don't remember. But it's all about what we're discussing and what we're talking about, because I know one of them I wrote about the time I was at – I teach at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, and it's a lovely center for holistic studies. And I remember that I was once in the cafeteria, and it was a lunch break, and there was a woman's voice over the head and asking if she could sit down next to me. And I'm like, okay, who is this lady? And you never know how things are going to happen. So I talk about friendliness in the book, a solution is being friendly, as we just discussed. And this lady, Nancy, sat down, and she was another faculty member, and she was teaching creative writing. And I liked her energy right away. I thought, this lady's great. And she said, well, I'm doing a class on poetry, and if you'd like to come by and experience it in the evening when you have a sampler class, I would love that. And I said, okay, that'd be great. And she had a wonderful story about, I guess it was a poem that she wrote, about it was about her whole life, and she had a really difficult time, and she lost her son, and she had these poems that she used to write him, and she never really thought anything of it. But to make a long story short, one of those poems actually ended up saving another person's life. And I wouldn't have known any of this unless I just said, sure, come on, sit down next to me. So we never know how we're going to be used, how our soul's going to be used. So one of the solutions I have, of course, is friendliness, being open to people. And also along with that, you know, the other end of that is be friendly, but also you have to have boundaries. Make sure that nobody takes advantage of that friendliness, that, you know, they're respectful. We have to respect those boundaries. But I often say don't waste the time being friendly to others, because you think that, you know, you may give them a gift, but no, you're going to receive a gift. So I think it always is wonderful to be open and to be friendly. That's a solution that I have in the book, one of the stories. And I live every day, well, I say attempt to, Victor, trying to live every day with a discovery, a sense of soul discovery. Like, wow, what am I going to discover today? What's going to be different? What am I going to learn today? I hope it's something that I really take advantage of and I really take into my being, because there's so much offered us every single day. And the more that we're open to receiving, the more that we'll be aware of it. So awareness is another solution, being aware. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I've lived my life since I was just 64 on Tuesday. And since my 38th birthday,
I thought you were 34, so good for you.
Good for you. And since my 38th birthday, where my rediscovery took place, I've been living my life with that way. And what I've found is when you open to discovery, when you open to your soul receiving new information, to your spirit receiving new information, synchronicity kicks in and you start connecting and meeting wonderful people who will bring you information and messages that you really need for your soul's growth and for your personal expansion and for your love. And I think once once we open rather than remain closed and say, I welcome these new experiences into my life, everything happens.
It's true. It's so true. And you know, as you know everything, we are soul beings. It's all about energy. I talk a lot about energy in the book. And we are energy, molecules that move at a certain rate of speed. Life force flows through us all the time, the top of our head, out of our feet. It's always flowing like a waterfall, flowing, flowing, flowing. And life is movement. Life is all about movement. But if you're going to stop that movement and become stagnant, whether that's holding on to an emotional upset, not forgiving someone, whatever that might be, you're being stagnant. You're not learning. You're not opening. When you can open up and let that energy flow, and just like you said, being open to new discoveries, what are you going to learn today, then you're really truly living life. but we hold on to old upset and grudges and we can't forgive, then we're blocking the energy from flowing. Whether it's an emotional level, it'll eventually affect the physical body. But really, we have to realize that it's all about flowing. It's all about that energy flowing, and that's how we can discover for sure.
Now, we've touched upon this a little early in the show, but let's talk about this a little more because I think this is really important.
Okay.
How can we still love if someone hurts us?
So forgiveness is the first step in unconditional love, I believe. I believe it's a keystone in unconditional love. It's forgiveness. And it's getting that sense of, just because we forgive somebody doesn't mean we have to accept that behavior. It doesn't mean you accept the behavior, that the behavior is right. It might be a wrong behavior. But not holding on to it, not giving those charges to it, don't give it life. Because when we hold on to that, you know, by forgiving others, we're giving ourselves a gift because, again, blocking, it becomes toxic in the body. If you're holding on to it, there's disharmony, there's imbalance, and it'll manifest eventually in the physical. So it's a gift we give ourselves. And we have to remember the perspective that if somebody did something we don't accept or if something is doesn't mean everything is great. You know, I mean, certain things are done are wrong. It's wrong. It doesn't mean, you know, it's not acceptable, but it's just the wrong behavior. What can we do? Well, maybe we can help to educate. Maybe we help to let the person know that's not the right type of behavior. That's unacceptable for you. You have to respect people or respect certain things to do. You can't do things that way. That's not right. How would you like to treat another one like that, another person like that? How would you like to receive that? So we have to just be conscious. We got to be mindful, and we have to have a certain perspective about certain behaviors and belief systems.
Absolutely. You know, and today in with our digital media, we hear a lot about hatred and people hating each other. And many teachers throughout the years have said hatred is like taking poison and expecting the other person to die.
It's true. It's really, really true. Now, this is very interesting because the spirit point of view, and they've shown me clairvoyantly, I've seen I do what I call soul-to-soul readings, where I'm able to see the soul, the colors of the soul. As an audience member would stand up, I'll be able to see their soul colors. And the soul colors are a mixture, if you will, of different patterns that they have within this lifetime or other lifetimes, behaviors, belief systems, thoughts, things they've done, things love they have, the amount of love they have for themselves and for each other. And many times I've seen it clairvoyantly, when someone has not forgiven someone, when someone is holding on to something, it's not too pretty. It's not a nice color. It's almost like a stain, and it doesn't help. So it really is toxic. I think I really, from what I've seen clairvoyantly, I would just say the closest thing I could say is a stain. It stains the heart. It stains the soul. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's not good. And again, our natural behavior, our natural vibration, our natural energy is love. The further we get away from love, the further, you know, we're getting away from our happiness, of our true essence.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people have a tendency in this world to catastrophize. They walk into a situation, no matter what it is, and they visualize the worst possible outcome for themselves in that
situation.
We
love those people, don't we?
And when they're on the other side, they find out it really wasn't true. Why is it that why does fear play such a major role in many people's lives? And how do we overcome it?
I think fear is controlling. I think, again, going back to what I've said earlier, that it's a control issue, that people want to feel like they're in control. And if this doesn't happen, oh, my goodness, I'm out of control. So it's having that thought that we're going to be out of control of our universe, out of control of our little atmosphere, and we're going to be out of control, whatever that means, because, like I said, we don't have control. So I think that, you know, we have to realize, I have a great mantra that I've been using for many years now, and it is what it is, and that's all that it is. Don't make it more than it is. Mm. You know, it is. It's a book is a book is a book, or a contact lens is a contact lens. There's nothing more. You know, we can make it the worst thing possible, these scenarios. Why do we do that? It's all just fear-based. Instead of love, why don't we turn around and say, love, wow, this contact lens is, I don't know why I'm picking contact lens. It's contact. It's beautiful. What does it do? It helps people see. It's a nice shape. It's colorful. It's a nice, the texture is very nice here. It's soft. Whatever. Try to come in from a loving point of view, optimistic point of view, instead of a negative and pessimistic point of view. What's the point? We're all going to get out of it eventually. We're all going to leave this planet. We're, every single person is, I can guarantee, every person is going to die, every single one of us. We're never going to get alive, getting out of it alive. So might as well take the time to be loving. Why, we love love. Why not? Why love love? Why be in fear? Why waste the time? So that's the human, that's
absolutely
the ego, the negative part of the ego getting involved.
Absolutely. Their book, The Power of Love, Connecting to the Oneness. What do you hope that readers will take from this book?
It's a simple book. It's again, a very simple book that was channeled, but it's a simple book, but it's a powerful book. It's a very, very powerful book. Just holding the book, the vibration, the frequency, like, wow. And I've had a lot of great, great reactions, even in Amazon, 5 stars, and a lot of people have been writing me. I just hope that this is a guide for them to look within themselves and see what they, how they've been living their lives, the choices that they make, where do they give the energy to the choices that they make. Maybe they can forgive others, they can make a better life for somebody else that they come in contact with. So it's really a guide to live life in a better way, or a more authentic way. So that's what I hope they get out of it.
And we've got about a minute left. Please tell our listeners about the James von Prague School of Mystical Arts.
That took me about, I'd say, 6 or 7 years to get that together. It's an internet school, so it's, the JVP School of Mystical Arts, and it's a school on the internet where you have, I have a 6-week course, certification course on mediumship, on psychic abilities, developing your intuition, 28-day transformation. I have a day in the spirit world where I actually guide people to take a visit to the spiritual dimensions. So all these different classes and courses people can take, and it's just on the internet.
James von Prague, thank you so much for joining us tonight. What an absolute thrill and a privilege to have you with us.
Thank you, Victor. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And I'm Victor Furman, saying we're sitting in for Sandy Sedgebeer tonight. Sandy, get better soon. And thank you for joining us on What's Going On. Good night, everyone.